Many of a certain generation will remember the scene from the Mel Brooks film History of the World, Part 1, when Moses stands atop Mount Sinai looking down upon the Hebrews with three large stone tablets balanced precariously in his hands. Moses, who is of course played by Mel Brooks himself, says to the Israelites, "Oh, hear me, all pay heed. The Lord Jehovah, has given you these 15, at which point Moses stumbles and drops one of the three tablets, and it shatters. And so he pauses sheepishly, mumbles, "Oi," and then says, 10 commandments for all to obey. In 2006, Georgia Congressman Lynn Westmoreland sponsored a bill declaring that the Ten Commandments are fundamental principles and the cornerstone of a just and fair society. Congressman Westmoreland's bill would also have required that the Ten Commandments be prominently displayed in the United States Capitol building. And in an interview, Westmoreland explained, quote, "Well, the Ten Commandments is not a bad thing for people to understand and to respect. Where better could you have something like that than a judicial building or a courthouse, or one presumes, the United States Capitol?" Well, whether or not one agrees with the placement of religious monuments on public property, surely most would agree, I think, with the congressman's sentiment about understanding and respecting such a foundational part of our religious and cultural tradition. So far, so good. But then the interviewer asked the congressman the obvious follow-up. "What are the Ten Commandments?" he asked. "Can you name them all?" Well, for just a split second, Congressman Westmoreland looked like someone had punched him in the stomach, as if it had never occurred to him that the interview might take such a turn. He then responded, quote, "What, all of them? You want me to name them all?" Pregnant pause. And then he said, "Don't murder, don't lie, don't steal. I can't name them all." Well, the point is that the Ten Commandments, like so much else in religious life in different eras and at different places, have themselves become a fetish, a symbol of something that bears little relationship to the content of those commandments at all. It seems to me that if we take the good congressman at his word, that the Ten Commandments are a cornerstone of a just and fair society, that they deserve our understanding and respect, then the first step is not to chisel them in marble and set them on the courthouse lawn, but to know what they say. And with God's help, to follow them. So, today's sermon is going to be a little bit different from the norm. No narrative storytelling, no attempt at deep theologizing, no soaring words that seek to inspire. Instead, we're actually going to look at the Ten Commandments. We're going to consider what they actually say and why they might matter in our lives. Are you ready? You could actually even follow along in your service leaflet. In case you drifted off into just a temporary daydream, that was our first reading this morning. At the very outset, it is important to remember the context in which God issues these commandments. If you'll recall, the Israelites have just been released from bondage in Egypt. After many generations of slavery, they are now free. And yet they have no idea what it looks like to live as a free people who serve under no one's arbitrary yoke. So God grants them the Ten Commandments, not as a stifling burden, but as the broad corralling boundaries within which the life of free people can be lived in mutuality and respect, and one hopes even joy. And they intend to provide for us the same. Now, if you're following along in your leaflet, know that we're going to save the first three commandments for the end. So we'll jump to the fourth commandment, which is, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. See, throughout most of Christian history, throughout most of human history, when labor was grinding and back-breaking and incessant, the Sabbath day was literally life-saving. It gave the body time to heal and to restore its energy. But in today's world, the Sabbath is equally crucial, I would argue. We are workaholics. And with email and cell phones and social media, our work creeps into every facet of our lives, including the dinner table and the bedroom. And this phenomenon includes not only our paid labor, even our recreation increasingly has a job-like quality to it. Think kids' sports. In everything, we want to accomplish, to achieve, to do more. And consequently, we are perpetually fatigued, physically, psychologically, and emotionally. We are weary, but we do not rest. God understands our human need, and so God commands us to observe Sabbath. Imagine, just for a moment, how different our lives would be if for 24 solid hours a week, we shed the need to do and concentrated instead on being present to ourselves, to God, and to the ones we most love. If nothing else, our blood pressure would benefit from the change. The fifth commandment is honor your father and mother. Now, in our psychological age, this one can trip us up. Because frankly, some among us, have endured bad fathers or bad mothers. Healing psychologically from abuse can be a lifelong effort. But even for such people, and for all of us, the importance of the fifth commandment is the reminder that none of us is entirely self-made. Where we love, we have learned from someone how to love. Where we have advantage, we have benefited from someone who sacrificed to grant us that advantage. It is our sacred responsibility to maintain a posture of remembrance and response to the generation from which we have sprung, not to ignore its faults and its flaws, but to nevertheless acknowledge our gratitude by granting it grace. The behavioral commandments come next. They are basic, and they are unassailable. And that's exactly why humanity has always been mystified at its inability to keep them. The breadth of the sixth commandment, do not murder, is a topic of endless theological debate. Some believe that it intends a blanket prohibition against all killing. Others believe it is more specific, referring to unlawful killing while acknowledging that in our broken world, there are circumstances of justice that require the taking of a life by the appropriate and authorized authorities. But in either translation, in either interpretation, the commandment demands that life, all life, belongs first to God and not to us. That life, all life, not only the lives of those we love or with whom perhaps we agree, is to be treated with awe and with reverence. The seventh commandment, do not commit adultery. That couldn't be clearer, it seems to me. A priest once said to me, quote, half the world's problems would be solved if people would not have sexual relations with people to whom other people are married. Let's just let that sink in for a moment before we move on. The eighth commandment, do not steal. It means do not take as your own things that are not yours or are not yours entirely. In our world, with our sometimes scarcity of resources, this is doubly important. Failure to share those things that we hold in common is another form of theft. Just as surely as theft is me pickpocketing your wallet. The tenth commandment, and I recognize that I'm skipping for a moment the ninth. The tenth commandment is do not covet your neighbor's house. And that concerns, as one theologian puts it, the destructive power of desire. Though it comes later in the list, it is actually the precursor to do not steal. You see, if one indulges a covetousness for what belongs to somebody else, then over time that one will rationalize stealing that thing through either lawful or unlawful means. Now, sandwiched between these two is the ninth commandment against bearing false witness. This does not mean lying in general. Although that's bad too. The prohibition against bearing false witness refers to claiming as true a depiction of reality one knows to be false. Let's say that again. The ninth commandment of God against bearing false witness refers to claiming as true a depiction of reality one knows to be false. The commandment prohibits falsely marring another person's reputation, either in malice or ignorance. It condemns distorting the truth to prop up one's own ideology. And I wish that Congressman Westmoreland and all of his colleagues on both sides of the aisle and in all branches of government would read this commandment most of all. Now, going back to the start, the Ten Commandments begin with the most important three, which are prioritized even before the laws against murder and theft. The Ten Commandments as a whole begin with God saying, one, you shall have no other gods before me. Two, you shall not make for yourself an idol. And three, you shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God. These three commands are the backdrop of the other seven. They tell us that we must not consider God peripherally or casually or flippantly. We must not use God or God's name as a tool, as a means to our own ends. The theologian Paul Tillich, a favorite of mine, famously said that our God is that in which we place our ultimate concern. Let me say that again. Our God is that in which we place our ultimate concern. And so we could each ask ourselves, what is my God? To what do I give my greatest attention? The greatest degree of my energy? The greatest sum of my money? What is my ultimate concern in my daily life? And if the answer is anything but the God of love, then our lives are askew. All of the other commandments will then be more difficult to keep because love is not in the center. Because love is not the core from which all of our other living extends. To live as a free people in Israel and today, that means to live attentive to and grounded by and centered in the God of love. When we are so, then we will care for ourselves with rest. We will respect those from whom we've come. We will honor our vows to our loved ones. We will revere life. We will be satisfied with enough in life. And we will speak the truth to ourselves and to others. Friends, this is not bondage. This is the very definition of freedom. It is the gift to us from the God of love. And it is the invitation to live our lives in God. And so for these Ten Commandments, thanks be to God. Amen.